So I do see a little bit more collaboration and information sharing across facilities that might even be, consider each other competitors when it comes to the off-flavor topic. So maybe my perception is a little bit different, but I do think that it is talked about maybe more than other topics.
Welcome to RAS Talk, the podcast on recirculating aquaculture systems and sustainable food production. Brought to you by RAS Tech Magazine, the premier publication for recirculating aquaculture systems professionals. This episode is sponsored by OxyGuard International. Secure, grow, evolve. Improve your production with tailored and targeted technology. Hello again, listeners. My name is Jean Codin, and I'm the editor of RAS Tech Magazine.
Hello, I'm Justin Henry in the RAS space since 1996.
So today we have sort of a different type of episode. We're not profiling a RAS project this time around. Today we're talking to John Davidson, who is a research scientist at the Conservation Fund's Freshwater Institute, who specializes in the depuration process and mitigating off-flavor in RAS. So we wanted to bring him on to talk about his latest research on the feasibility of feeding fish during the depuration process. And he talked about some really interesting points there, and so did Justin. So Justin, I want to throw it to you. Can you comment on why ongoing research on depuration and off-flavor is so important for the RAS industry?
Gene, over the first decades of the development of the salmon farming industry, I guess really since the 70s, there wasn't much or any consideration of off-flavor. Salmon grown in net pens weren't typically exposed to off-flavor compounds. And then as the RAS technologies being developed for smolt production, didn't really have a concern about off-flavor. Off-flavor wasn't relevant for that industry. Pond farmers did have experience, but net pen farmers didn't. So when these farmers in the salmon industry started to harvest fish out of RAS, off-flavor was unexpected, maybe a surprise. I guess that was understandable. It did happen to me as well with sturgeon, but that was 20 years ago. So we've known for 20 years that RAS-grown fish need finishing systems, yet some RAS projects still aren't fully planning for those. And ongoing research is essential because we still don't understand the variables impacting the development of off-flavor producing bacteria. And additionally, we don't yet know how to fully control these off-flavor compounds, in particular within the RAS.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to kind of listen to you and John talk about weighing the costs and benefits of investing in the finishing process for a RAS facility. And I think the listeners will be really fascinated about that as well, because it's such a, well, every RAS project is unique, but it's such a important cost benefit analysis for every project.
Yeah, for sure, Gene, it is. And the more research that's done and the more we understand what can be controlled and how to control it, it'll be a lot easier for industry to make those decisions going forward.
Well, without further ado, I hope you enjoy the RAS Talk podcast with John Davidson. Welcome back to the podcast, John.
Well, thanks for having me, Jean. It's great to be back with you and Justin, and really looking forward to our discussion today.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting because I think for the listeners who are curious, this is a little bit of a reunion because both John and Justin came on to one of the first episodes of this podcast to talk about off-flavor back in the day when the podcast was still early days. I was the associate editor of RAS Tech Magazine at the time, so John and Justin talked to our OG hosts, our original hosts, Mary Lynn De Guzman and Brian Vinci. And I kind of wanted to ask you both, and I'll ask John first because you're the guest. I wanted to ask you what you remember about that first episode together.
Yeah, I actually had to look back because it felt like it was a relatively long time ago. And it was. It was 4 years ago, March of 2020. And I actually went back and listened to a little bit of that podcast. And it turns out that it was right at the beginning of the pandemic when we were just beginning to try to navigate through what this means, how to social distance, how to work from home effectively, et cetera. And Brian and Mary Lynn had this really interesting preliminary discussion about all those details. So that part is interesting to go back and listen to a little bit of as it is. And then Justin and I had a great conversation about all flavor as well.
Yeah, Justin, what do you remember about that episode?
Yeah, that was interesting, John, that it was right at the beginning of COVID. And yeah, we've been in COVID for 4 years now. That's interesting to think about. I remember I was reminiscing during that episode, I think, about my early experiences with off-flavor, both in wild fish and farmed fish. I remember thinking that I was a bit shocked at the time that new RAS farmers were not really taking off-flavor seriously yet. And now, 4 years later, some farmers still aren't. So I'm glad, John, that you're still continuing your research on this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're here to talk about some of John's latest research in the depuration process, which he shared in Hatchery International's March-April 2024 issue. So if you're curious, I'll leave a link to our website for you to take a look at that. But John, for those who haven't read it, can you please give us a bit of a synopsis or an abstract of that study?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. It's one of the things I really like about my job is that most of the research that we carry out, we make publicly available to support the industry. So it's always nice to share that research as much as we can. The article that I summarized in Hatchery International was based on a peer review research article that we published in the Journal of the World Aquaculture Society. And the title of that article is Evaluating the Feasibility of Feeding RAS-Produced Atlantic Salmon During the Depuration Process. So specifically, we were interested in how feeding would affect fish weight loss and whether we could still effectively depurate and eliminate off flavor if we were feeding during this process. So if you want to see more about that paper, as Gene mentioned, it's on Hatchery International. We have a summary. You could also go to the Journal of the World Aquaculture Society, and we have a link to the peer review article on our website at the Freshwater Institute. A little bit of background just to maybe set the tone for this is that it's typical to not feed fish during the depuration process. And I thought maybe I'd give a little bit of background of why that is. So first and foremost, as in most food production, agricultural food production, or especially with fish, there's a general practice to take the fish off feed for a few days before you harvest. And that is essentially to make sure that the processing and the filleting is sanitary by eliminating the contents of the gastrointestinal tract. And then also that, you know, you're creating a scenario that's less stressful for the fish. When it comes to depuration, we typically will keep the fish off feed for a little bit longer period than 2 to 3 days. At the Freshwater Institute, we keep the fish off feed for 6 days, and that works for us. We effectively purge the fish and eliminate off flavor to non-detectable levels by day six. But that might be a longer period at other commercial facilities, up to 10 days or so. There's also a general thought process that if you feed fish during depuration, that you might be increasing your risk of off flavor directly in this finishing system. So obviously when you're feeding fish, you're producing organic material and nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus in the water. And you could then create biofilms that contain all flavor producing bacteria. So in general, it's just not really been attempted to feed fish during the purging process. But we thought this was it was worth a try. That, you know, we'll just try to feed Atlantic salmon and see what happens. And we were really interested in the weight loss component of that, which has been maybe a small criticism of the depuration process. So that's kind of the background. And I'll just get into maybe the nuts and bolts of the research. We raised Atlantic salmon to market size in our semi-commercial RAS that we have here at the Freshwater Institute. We grow fish on site at our facility from egg up to market size, which is about 4 kilograms. We then move those fish to a separate tank, and we pit tagged the fish, which was very important for the study, so that we could track the exact weight loss in individual fish with time. So we did that a few weeks before the study itself. And then as we got close to the study, we dosed the fish with concentrated geosmin and MIB so that they had relevant concentrations in their flesh. And then we moved those fish into 8 replicated depuration systems, which are essentially partial reuse systems. 4 of those systems, we fed a low ration, which I think was 0.2% of the biomass. And then the other 4 systems, we did not feed, which would be the typical depuration scenario. At the beginning and the end of the study, and I think also in the middle, we took, we harvested a few fish so we could track the depuration kinetics and how fast the off flavor was eliminated. And we also measured weight loss across the study. So in a nutshell, we found that we reduced weight loss almost 4-fold by feeding the groups of fish in the 4 depuration, or in the 4 depuration systems versus the fish that were not fed. And we also found that we did not inhibit off flavor elimination, that the fish purged just like they normally would per our experience at the Freshwater Institute. So these were really interesting outcomes that point to the feasibility of this approach.
Thanks, John, for the overview of the study. I've got one clarifying question. When you finished the study and took the data on the fish, were you weighing fish round or head-on gutted? Or what was the form of fish that you weighed at the end?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's important that we understand the details of how we measured the weight loss and some of the implications of really how you study this weight loss metric. So the first thing that I should say is that we only fed fish for a portion of the depuration cycle. So we didn't feed right after we stocked for about a day, because obviously the fish are they're probably a little bit stressed from moving into the depuration system. And then at the end of the cycle, we also didn't feed for about a day so that the fish could clear the gut for the most part. And we were just measuring initial and at the end of the study the whole body fish, which is important to understand, is the whole fish.
Before we move further ahead in the discussion, maybe we should have just a little recap on why we need to depurate RAS-grown fish. If you can just give a brief overview for the listener on the off-flavor compounds.
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, that maybe we have some listeners that aren't familiar with this at all, that we provide some of that background. I'll start out and say that it's also important that we understand that all flavor-producing bacteria are ubiquitous, meaning that they're found in soils and freshwater and saltwater in many different places, most places actually. So this is not just really a RAS problem. I think that's important to point out. Really, if you go back into the aquaculture industry, you'll find that this was initially a problem and probably still is to some extent for the pond-based catfish industry. So really, it just requires having bacteria, or in the case of the catfish industry, cyanobacteria or blue-green algae that produce these compounds to potentially have this challenge at your aquaculture fish farm. For RAS, I think this becomes maybe more of a challenge, or maybe it's heightened a bit, because we have these more intensive systems where we're producing usually a more concentrated environment with accumulating nitrogen and phosphorus, and depending on the system, maybe some organic material that seems to be a promoter of certain bacteria in these systems that create these all-flavor compounds. And the compounds that we're talking most about, which are the most common, are geosmin and 2-methyl isoborneol, which we usually use an acronym of MIB. And these compounds create these off tastes, which are generally perceived by people as being an earthy, muddy, or musty flavor. So most consumers would basically find these to be objectionable types of flavors in the fish flesh. And the product would probably be rejected, or at least receive an extremely bad review based on, having these compounds at certain concentrations in Atlantic salmon flesh or other species that are raised in RAS. I wanted to give an example why this would be so important, especially for Atlantic salmon, is that it takes almost 2 years to grow an Atlantic salmon from fertilized egg up to a market-sized fish. So you've invested all the resources and feed, energy, water, and labor to raise those fish for 2 years. And you could potentially get to the end of that cycle, harvest a fish that has this earthy, muddy flavor, and then completely have that product rejected at the marketplace. And then all that, all those resources would go to waste, and it would be a tremendous economic drawback for a commercial land-based facility.
Yeah, that is a shame if you when you put all that work and money into it and you don't have the best quality product at the end. Maybe we should define what a depuration system or a finishing system is for the listener that might not know that, and just touch on the drawbacks of such a system, which you did mention one already, John, that there could be some potential weight loss.
I think we're probably not very good at settling on one specific term for this, but finishing system is a good term because it is at the end of the production cycle. We also use depuration system or purging system as synonyms of the system itself. So really, this is a separate system that's apart from the primary RAS. When the fish get to market size, the typical approach will be to move those fish out of the primary RAS into this depuration system, which is operated with a lot more water exchange than the RAS would be. At the Freshwater Institute, the design of the depuration system is a partial reuse design for us. And what that means in terms of water use is that we're exchanging the water 6 to 7 times per day, complete replacement in that system, which results in a hydraulic retention time of every 3 to 4 hours. A RAS, as a comparison, at our facility, we're generally operating with something around a 10-day hydraulic retention time, meaning that it takes about 10 days to completely replace that water. And the reason that we are using more water in a depuration system is that the fish will eliminate that all flavor across the concentration gradient with its surrounding environment. It's also important that that supply water that's used in a depuration system has negligible all flavor concentrations to facilitate that elimination process of the all flavor. And then by having this higher exchange rate, it basically is carrying that released all flavor out of the system. So really, that's the premise for it. We really feel that it's important to have this separate system that the fish can be moved into. And then in terms of drawbacks, we mentioned the minor fish weight loss, but the one that probably is at the top is the water use itself. So when you turn this into a commercial scale scenario, that little bit of water that we use at the Freshwater Institute to purge salmon becomes a lot of water at a commercial scale. And there's different approaches that facilities will use to try to mitigate that. But that's one of the drawbacks, and making sure that you have enough water for the process. Just having the separate systems in themselves creates an additional capital expense and investment. There's energy resources that go along with that in operating pumps and blowers, et cetera.
Thanks, John, for bringing up one, the different terminologies. And it's true that the industry hasn't come to a common term for these things. And also for the description of withholding feed from the fish at the end. I like now to call it fasting, because fasting for humans is a super healthy trend. So I think it's good. Withholding feed, that will never be a healthy trend, but fasting, I think that is. So I'm going to stick with that moving forward.
Yeah, I like that term. I think we use that term specifically in the peer review article, and that is an accurate description, I think, of what's happening.
John, in regard to the results of your study, even on the Atlantic salmon that were fasting for 10 days, their weight loss didn't seem to be that much. I think it was 1.11%. Which, as I recall, is less than reported in some other literature. Is there something that you did differently, or do you know why the weight loss was that amount?
Yeah, we did a few things differently. We've been learning more about this weight loss metric as we've kind of navigated through the various depuration studies that we've carried out. I should clarify that we used a 6-day depuration period, which equates to the 1.1%, because that's standard, the standard depuration period at our facility. And that's what we use for the study. But a few things that we did differently. First, we pit tagged the fish, which in past studies, a lot of the data analysis has been basically sampling groups of fish at the beginning and end, and then calculating an average. So the potential for having different fish in those beginning and end groups is pretty high when using that type of analysis. But when you're tracking weight loss of individual pit tagged fish, you know the exact weight loss of all those same fish from beginning to end. So I think that's really important for accuracy. The other thing that we realized through this process is we looked back at the Burr et al. 2012 paper, which Dr. Steve Sommerfeld was a co-author from the Freshwater Institute, but the primary authors were at the USDA ARS Center in Franklin, Maine. Dr. Gary Burr and the late Bill Walters were involved. And we found that the initial body weight measurement for the fish in that study was collected when the fish had just been taken off feed. So these fish had contents in their gastrointestinal tract, which could have been even included some feed. And then during the depuration process, that digesta was excreted, and it was actually part of the measured weight loss, if that makes sense. So for this study, we made sure that the fish had a cleared gastrointestinal tract when we collected that baseline sample. So we had the fish all feed for 2 days before taking that initial measurement, so that was not part of the weight loss.
Yeah, thanks, John. So that really clarifies things, and I think helps people to understand what the actual loss is, and if some of the data out there does include contents of the GI tract, that doesn't necessarily constitute weight loss by losing that, as that's not something that you're going to be selling anyways.
Yeah, I would agree with that it's probably irrelevant weight loss. Mm-hmm. And then the other point that we talk a little bit about in the peer review article is that through the data analysis, it looked like we had some evidence that indicated that much of this loss is happening in the visceral mass of the fish. And so then you get into the question of how relevant is that weight loss in general, if it's happening in a portion of the fish that would generally be discarded. So then I think it becomes a question of how is each facility selling their fish? As I mentioned, we were measuring whole body fish. So if the facility is selling a whole fish, then certainly that loss becomes part of the economic equation and would be perceived as a potential loss. But if you're gutting the fish and discarding that, and the loss is happening in that visceral mass, then I think you have to start considering this a little bit different, at least from an economic standpoint.
Yeah, that's a great point, John. And I think something that we did briefly touch on 4 years ago during our discussion, but probably didn't have as much data at that point in time. But it is super important to know for the farmer what they're using the offal for. And if they're paying someone to take it away, then you want, as little offal as possible. And maybe that weight loss is a good thing. On the other hand, if you're selling fish round or alternatively processing the fish and selling the offal separately as a co-product, either into the pet food industry or fertilizer or some other use, then you can calculate that in, but probably at a different dollar value than actual loss of flesh.
Yes, I agree that it really is dependent on how each facility sells their fish. So it's important for producers to understand, the details of the weight loss and how to interpret that when they're considering the economics behind it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, you mentioned as a second drawback the water use that's required. And I'm wondering if there's a recommended amount of water in terms of cubic meters per kilo of fish or some other metric to remove off flavor. And I think when we discussed this 4 years ago, we were at around 1,000 liters per kilo of fish. And are we still around there, do you think?
I think it still remains around that. We published a paper on this exact topic. I believe it was in Aquacultural Engineering in 2020. And again, it's publicly available. And that metric, I think, came to light in that paper. And I believe we're still very close to that metric, if not a little bit lower. But I think it's important to also clarify what this metric means. So when we talk about 1,000 liters of makeup water per kilogram of fish biomass, that's 1,000 cumulative liters over the duration of that depuration period, not just, you know, by unit time. It's over the cumulative duration of the depuration period. The other qualifier there is that at our facility, because we don't really have a great lower threshold at which we know we need to purge the fish to, we typically will reduce all flavor to the lowest detectable level, which is less than 100 nanograms per kilogram. So that might extend that period a little bit longer, which would require a little bit more cumulative water. So I think we're close on that, but there's a few things that could impact that value.
A main reason I think that we need this continued research, that it's so important, because the water required for finishing is much higher than the amount of water needed to grow the fish. So I think that research is essential to get to a point where we can figure out how to reduce that amount of water so that it matches the amount of water we need to grow the fish.
I definitely agree with that. And I should point out that one of the strategies that is used by at least some of the commercial RAS facilities that are raising salmonids is to actually bring their supply water first into the depuration system, and then to actually reuse that water as the water leaving the depuration system as supply water to the RAS. So by doing so, they kind of get a double use out of that water supply. So that's one strategy that helps to balance out that loss instead of depurating the fish and then just sending that water to effluent. But I agree that we still need to keep working on this and reducing the requirement for water use and depuration.
Yeah, that's a great point, John, that we can reuse that. And hopefully at some point you can reuse all of it, or you need all of that finishing water for your grow out. And then I think we're where we want to be. We're some years away from that yet.
Being a RAS professional, you may have heard of Cabalia. It's a cloud-based aquaculture management platform provided by OxyGuard International. But have you seen it in action? Well, right now you can, by simply visiting cobalia.com to book your free product demo. Eliminate paperwork and manage all your RAS production data in one place with Cabalia. OxyGuard. Secure. Grow. Evolve.
In the recent study on your feeding fish during the finishing period, you talked about the Atlantic salmon and the results from that study. Now, you also mentioned in the study work with rainbow trout and then additional work with barramundi. And could you just comment on those species as well?
Yeah, sure. The Atlantic salmon really was our focus, and we carried out an in-depth, scientifically relevant study with the salmon where we had replicated depuration systems, and that's the focus of the peer review article. And then we also summarized that in the Hatchery International article. Through this project, we also did a little bit of work with rainbow trout. We didn't have replicated depuration systems, but we used relatively large 18 cubic meter partial reuse systems for the trout. One of those systems we fed the fish, and then the other system we did not feed the fish per normal procedure. And we found that the Atlantic salmon and the rainbow trout respond very differently as they do during typical production. Atlantic salmon tend to feed when the feed comes to them, and rainbow trout are much more voracious eaters. And as soon as the feed hits the water, it's almost a frenzy to capture that feed. And we saw these effects during our depuration studies where we were trying to feed fish. So with the Atlantic salmon, we had a fair amount of wasted feed, even though we were feeding a low ration with automated feeders. So we have some recommendations in the paper where you might want to consider something like a more controlled feeding approach, like hand feeding for Atlantic salmon, to make sure you're not wasting feed. But with the rainbow trout, we used automated feeders. The feed hit the water and they basically consumed everything. And we actually saw a little bit of a weight gain during that depuration study with the trout, which we show in the Hatchery International article. So very different effects and scenarios with different species, even within the same family. And then the barramundi was studied by collaborators, Drs. Jaap van Rijn and Dr. Sneer Azaria in Israel. This was carried out under a funding platform called the Binational Agriculture Research and Development Fund, BARD, it's meant to include researchers in Israel collaborating with researchers in the United States. And I've always had a lot of respect for Jaap and Sneer, and they studied the barramundi on their side. We studied the salmonids on our side. And with the barramundi, I think what they found is that this is a very different species that doesn't have a lot of lipids in its flesh, which makes it less prone to off-flavor accumulation. So the purging period for barramundi, I think, was very short. And over that short period, which I think was 4 days, the fish didn't lose any weight. So it's very species specific when we start to decide whether or not we even want to consider feeding fish in depuration systems. Some species you might want to and others not, based on looking at these different types of fish.
Super interesting study, and recommend people go out and take a look at it. John, after the work that you've done so far, this preliminary work on feeding, do you think that farmers should be designing finishing systems now that will allow for feeding?
That's a great question. First, I think I would qualify that, you know, our research shows that it's feasible. So I don't know if we're really making a strong recommendation, because there's a lot of different elements that are very site-specific in the industry. We talked about potentially reusing depuration system water. If you were to be feeding fish, that would change a little bit of the mass balance of that inlet water to your RAS. So that would have to be considered in the engineering component at a facility. Alternatively, if you were discharging your depuration system water, that would have implications for your waste discharge permit. So there's a lot of things to think about when making this decision to feed fish in depuration system. The one thing that I would say in terms of whether or not to design for feeding is that our system is essentially already designed in a way that it would handle fish fecal material or wasted feed. We use a dual drain style culture tank, just like we would in our traditional production systems. Also in our depuration system, and then we have gas conditioning to remove CO2. We have an LHO to add oxygen. The only thing that I think would become a strong consideration would be addition of a drum filter, which we currently do not have in our depuration system. But if we began to consistently feed during depuration, I would say that would be a strong consideration.
I've really enjoyed your conversation with Justin so far, John. And I really wanted to talk about what you both alluded to in the beginning in terms of how the discussion around off-flavor has changed since, you know, that first episode in March 2020. From your own observations of the industry, would you say that depuration or finishing process has become more common practice in the industry, or maybe not? What have you observed?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting comment that Justin led the podcast with, that his experience is that there are still some players out there that haven't fully grasped this idea and aren't always depurating fish. I think that from my perspective, and we work pretty closely with a lot of the US-based RAS facilities through our research and making sure that we're carrying out relevant research to them, is that most facilities do have some form of depuration in place in the United States. And I'm not as familiar with some of the European facilities. And usually that will involve a separate depuration system and not a purge in place. Although I've seen both variations of that, where there's an attempt to purge the fish directly within the RAS itself, which doesn't always work out well, because this is the system where there's more potential to accumulate the geosmin and MIB. But my general experience is that most of the U.S. RAS facilities are using some form of depuration.
One of the reasons why I was curious about talking to you both about off-flavor again was because from my perspective, I still feel like off-flavor and even in the same boat of mortalities are still very taboo for the industry to talk about. Do you find that as well? Because the fact that you mentioned earlier on about how, you know, off-flavor compounds are ubiquitous and it's not necessarily a RAS problem, but why don't we talk about it in more RAS projects, do you think?
Yeah, my perception on that, it might be a little bit different. And, you know, I'm coming from a research standpoint. I feel like, you know, we talk about it a good bit. And, you know, we've been researching all flavor and looking for solutions to this, you know, through development of the depuration process for more than a decade. And through that, we have always been publishing and making our research publicly available. And we always are presenting about it at industry conferences. When it comes to discussion among stakeholders, maybe, actually, I think this topic is more openly shared and collaborated on than others. And I think the reason for that is it's seen as, well, if a product enters the marketplace and it has all flavor, it's not only a black eye potentially for that particular producer, but it could also create a perception of RAS products in general. So I do see a little bit more collaboration and information sharing across facilities that might even be, you know, consider each other competitors when it comes to the all flavor topic. So maybe my perception is a little bit different, but I do think that it is talked about maybe more than other topics.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that's sort of what we want in the podcast in general, for the industry to share knowledge like this and share lessons learned. I fully understand, of course, that off-flavor events or any sort of bad news about RAS systems is not something that, you know, these companies will freely offer. But I think, especially with the audience that we have at RASTech Magazine, where you're talking to industry itself, there's such a benefit for the whole industry, for other professionals to kind of learn from each other. One other freshwater institute that I thought I'd ask you about, John, was the RAS salmon taste test that you guys conducted, I think a few months ago, or maybe even a year ago now. It has to do with the off flavor and the salmon, and whether or not consumers can identify the levels of off flavor in the fillets. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's a really interesting aspect of this whole picture, in that we haven't really pinned down an exact concentration that should be used as the target for depuration, that all fish need to be below X nanograms per kilogram of geosmin, for example. And that's why I mentioned earlier that we typically will just, as a safety factor, when we purge fish and send them out for food consumption, typically to like a food bank, we'll just depurate down to the lowest possible level, which is less than 100 nanograms per kilogram of geosmin. And we've never had any complaints at that level. So we know that that's okay. But what is the threshold above that potentially that consumers could detect? So we have carried out a few different studies, and we're actually heading towards another study trying to figure out this value. And it appears that maybe it's somewhere in the range of 300 to 400 nanograms per kilogram based on several different research studies. But the challenge is it also appears that there are some folks that are very sensitive to being able to taste earthy, muddy flavors. So in that particular study that we carried out, and we haven't published that, although I know I presented about it, we had a few consumers that were in that panel that would consistently mark that they tasted earthy, muddy flavor below that threshold of 300 nanograms per kilogram. So then it becomes, well, should we purge all the fish for these sensitive tasters? Or, you know, what is the happy medium there? And I think most would probably say we need to eliminate all the risk and purge to the lowest concentration. But that still seems to be a relatively unanswered question that we haven't quite pinned down yet. And so we have some more planned research on that.
I hope that most farmers want to eliminate the risk overall.
Yeah, I would think that would be the general approach, but it would certainly be interesting to have a more definitive value available to the industry.
Yeah, great point. And I agree with you, John, that I think that there's good collaboration, at least on the research side, developing off-flavor depurating strategies. One challenge that I see is perhaps more with newcomers to the RAS space or newcomers to the aquaculture space, as well as some farmers or facilities that have experienced that their RAS farms do not produce off flavor. And I've seen that before where some farms don't have off flavor initially, and then one day they do have it. So for sure, it is a topic that shouldn't be ignored, I don't think, by anybody in the space.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point. And I'm glad you brought that up because we're one of those facilities. We actually do not have much off flavor in our fish or in our RAS water at the Freshwater Institute. So often when we carry out a depuration study, we have to dose the fish with a concentrated compound that we would buy from a supplier to create higher off flavor concentrations. So yeah, I think that's important maybe for the general audience to understand is that this varies greatly from one site to another. There are some facilities that don't have this challenge. There are other facilities that have more of a challenge. And for us, and from my research perspective, I'm really interested in understanding why that is for us at the Freshwater Institute, that we are not challenged with all flavor. There must be something, a recipe, so to speak, in terms of the engineering design, the water quality that creates, or the microbiology. And this is something that I'll actually be presenting on this at RASTech. I'll throw a little bit of plug in there for you, Gene, for the RASTech meeting in June. We have some really interesting research where we're beginning to look at some of these things and different conditions that produce all flavor versus conditions that don't produce all flavor.
John, I think that is probably the most important question. So I look forward to research moving forward to try and answer that.
Yeah, we're really focused on that. We have a few studies coming up to kind of follow on this really interesting research that I can't talk too much about right now. But I can say that I think briefly that it appears that microbial maturity matters in this equation. And when I say microbial maturity, I mean the duration that a system is operated from biofilter startup to maybe when these fish are becoming market-sized fish. So we have some really interesting data to follow along with that. And then I think to your other point, Justin, about having episodes of all flavor, I think that remains a question that definitely won't be answered with this recent research that I'm talking about, that we would like to follow and maybe create disruptions of our RAS or diversions of our typical good water quality that might be related to certain off-flavor blooms, so to speak, in a RAS or sudden incidents of this.
John, I guess that there are two different really areas of research, and one is how to prevent or avoid the off-flavor compound producing bacteria in the first place, or how to prevent that in your RAS, which I think is the most important and the end goal. And then the other area of research, which I think is more for where we're at right now, is how do you remove the off flavor? And so I was wondering about any recent research or developments on types of finishing systems and depuration technologies that are out there or being developed, such as AOP, advanced oxidation process work, and other work with biofilters in a finishing system. Do you have thoughts on that, John?
Yeah, there certainly has been a good bit of work that's taking place outside of the Freshwater Institute, looking at some of these advanced oxidation processes. We've done a little bit of work on this and have some planned research on the horizon, but we're also in a collaborative project with the Institute of Marine and Environmental Technology, IMET, and Dr. Yoni Zohar, and a PhD student, Matt Stromberg, at that facility, who are really focused on studying AOP technologies and how they impact all flavor. They've looked at several different technologies now, and I know they have some other projects that they're planning and considering in the future. One of the technologies that they have evaluated, I know, has been used and maybe is still in use in commercial industry within the depuration system itself to help reduce the amount of water use and maybe the duration of the depuration process by removal of geosmin and MIB. And I have heard that this particular process is effective to some extent. And I think there are probably some other technologies that are out there like that. I think we start to get a little bit into, you know, there's always an economic equation that follows some of these decisions. And we're still on this in this gray area of economic viability, I think, and having commercial scale private facilities that prove out the economics. So I cringe a little bit in thinking that we're going to throw more advanced technologies and energy intensive technologies. But I also think that, you know, we really need to study all the options, and hopefully we'll maybe have a combination of microbial solutions within the primary RAS along with technology solutions. And that's a nice thing about the collaboration that we have with IMET. That's through the SAS2 program, which is Sustainable Aquaculture System Supporting Atlantic Salmon, is the acronym, which is funded through USDA NEFA. So we're learning a lot of good things that are helping to support the industry through that platform.
Well, thank you so much, John, for coming on to this episode and talking to us about your latest research and the conversation and the latest data that we have about off-flavor and how we can kind of mitigate that in our RAS industry. We'll have tons of links. I'll connect with you, John, later on so that we can bring in a lot of the resources that you mentioned in the episode available for people on our website. That way they can kind of read your research themselves and all of the other references that you've mentioned. But yeah, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks so much, Jean and Justin, for having me on. And as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you both and to share our research from the Freshwater Institute with the listeners. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, John. We'll see you down at RASTech.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We do want to do more technical episodes like this and bring in more experts on technology and research in between the profiles of the different RAS projects that we do out there. So if this is something that you like, please let us know.
Jean, it was a fantastic opportunity for our listeners to hear from John Davidson, who's really an expert leading the way on research in this field. We need industry to take this topic of off-flavor quite seriously. As John mentioned, when farmers have a misstep here or they're unable to properly depurate their fish, it isn't just damaging to their market, but there's a risk of damaging the reputation of the RAS industry as a whole. In the episode with John, we tried to refine some of the recommended terminology used here in the industry moving forward. John also identified the importance of how you collect your data in finishing trials. so that we know just how much weight loss we're talking about, if there is weight loss during finishing, and what part of the fish is actually losing weight. And John also gave a great update on the upcoming research that he's working on there at the Freshwater Institute. I think that after this episode, RAS farmers will all be considering whether they should incorporate feeding into their finishing systems.
Yes, absolutely. I hope it was informative for our listeners. And you know what, listeners, if you haven't gone to our website yet with all of our extras, this is the episode to do it because I will be linking all of John's research and all of the other studies that we reference in this episode onto our website, along with photos and other media that the Freshwater Institute might provide for us for this episode. So please check us out at rastechmagazine.com/podcast. That's rastechmagazine.com/podcast. Please consider sharing this episode with your network and on social media. It truly helps us out. You can also follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss a new episode. Thanks again to our sponsor, OxyGuard International. Secure, grow, evolve. Improve your production with tailored and targeted technology. Thanks for listening. See you next time.